This episode is brought to you by Netgear Orbi Wi-Fi 6. Is your Wi-Fi feeling old? It doesn't matter how fast your internet connection is if your Wi-Fi router is old and outdated. With Orbi Wi-Fi 6 from Netgear, your Wi-Fi will feel new again. Check out Orbi Wi-Fi 6 at your local Best Buy or at netgear.com/bestwifi. That's netgear.com/bestwifi.
Now hear this. There's been a slight change in our plan.
I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. Oh, yeah, this is Current Geek, the autopilot edition, a chance for us to watch a pilot episode of an old TV show, geek out about it, and have a good laugh. I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt. And this week, we are talking about Gilligan's Island.
Now, a lot of times when we do these autopilot versions of Current Geek, it's an excuse for us to watch the first episode of a show and then talk about the show in general, and we're definitely going to do that. But sometimes we get the gift that Gilligan's Island gave us, mm-hmm. which is a true pilot change, a true different pilot. In this case, an unaired pilot, a pilot that was changed dramatically between the time it was filmed and when they actually aired the first episode of Gilligan's Island. And there's tons of pilot-y goodness to talk about here.
Oh, yeah. Like the kind of stuff I love that comes up. And usually we don't know it until we've seen it. So as soon as Tom texted me and said, hey, guess what? This thing and that thing are different. Or on Wednesday's TMS, you're like, it's like a whole different song. I'm like, what? Really? A whole different song? You don't mean just like the professor and the rest. The movie star and the rest. It's more than that. And I thought, well, I don't even know what you're talking about. Well, it turns out this is perfect example of that. Last time we really experienced this was probably the Dick Van Dyke Show, which wasn't even called that in that pilot.
We had an entirely different show with an entirely different actor,
yeah,
who wasn't Dick Van Dyke. Therefore, the show had not been called the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yeah, different cast and everything. Now, this has a couple of things that are consistent. The boat is still called the Minnow. The skipper and Gilligan are there. But that's it. Everybody's different. There's a high school teacher instead of the professor, even though they call him the professor. Ginger is not, or she's, I guess she's still a movie star, but it isn't the actress we know.
And yeah, let's go through all the details and then we can hash this out.
Yeah.
Yes, Gilligan's Island aired for the first time in September 26, 1964, but the pilot episode called Marooned was filmed in 1963 in November. As you mentioned, Skipper Gilligan, but also the Howells, Mr. and Mrs. Howell, are all played by the people who would go on to play them in the rest of the series. Yeah. John Gabriel, however, plays the professor. And as you said, he was a high school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Ginger is played by Kit Smythe, who is a secretary from Kansas.
Right.
The very much not a movie star. And there's no Marianne. It's Bunny, Ginger's blonde coworker.
And they really play for dumb with her. They really go for that.
Yeah, she's stereotype. The quintessential dumb blonde, which I kind of love that they decided to go, you know what? When we won't have a blonde character at all, mm-hmm. we'll go a ginger and a brunette. Ginger, of course, being redhead.
Yeah, and the brunette being the opposite of dumb. She's smart and plucky and, you know, Marianne became some for a lot of people their favorite character because she wasn't just some pushover. She wasn't an airhead.
Yeah,
They changed all
She's
that.
She's the spunky one. She's the tomboyish one.
Yeah, and the parts that remain, the Howells are still too uppity for their own good and, you know, expect everyone to treat them like they're royalty, and that's just what you expect from them. The skipper's still kind of, you know, brave and sure, but also kind of a bumbler and falls over a lot and gets hit in the gut and that sort of thing.
Well, and in fact, some of the scenes from the very beginning of Marooned are reused in Two on a Raft, which was the first episode to air on CBS,
right?
To the point when you see the minnow after the storm and you see the skipper getting up and walking off the boat in the Two on a Raft that actually aired, it's got Kit Smythe and Bunny laying down. You can see them. You'd have to look real close to tell it's not actually Marianne, but
sure.
They reused that footage and especially the gag of Gilligan hearing the skipper yell for him and thinking man overboard and then diving into the sand.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of where the similarities end between the two episodes.
It's also something of note is the later episodes, both the early season with all the black and white and later color seasons and so on. They all mostly took place on a soundstage. Most of that stuff was just filmed straight up on a soundstage.
Right, pilot, down the road from me, actually, in Studio City.
Yeah, and this pilot, there's a lot of outdoor shots, like lots of on location, that island just off of wherever it is in California.
Well, they were in Hawaii.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's even better.
They shot in Hawaii. In fact, Natalie Schaefer, who plays Lovey Howell, agreed to do the show because she wanted to go to Hawaii.
Wow.
And she thought, it'll never last. It probably won't even get picked up. It's a silly show. This will be a great excuse to have a free trip to Hawaii, because she was in her 60s.
Oh, she looks pretty good for her 60s.
Yeah.
That surprises me.
She didn't want anyone to know that. She never let anyone know her age. Mm-hmm. And she didn't want close-ups. They got away from that in the later seasons. But in her first season, there were going to be no close-up shots of Natalie Schaefer as Lovey. Can you imagine to be like, oh, I'll just do this for a free vacation to Hawaii. It'll never turn into anything. And then end up not only roped into an iconic show, but have to do 3 reunion movies.
Yeah. No, it went long. And
when you're in your 80s.
Yeah. And this thing had 36 episodes in its first season alone. Just an enormous front end to a show.
I mean, even by 1960 standards, that's huge.
Yeah. And they were only half an hour, but still, it just felt like really long. But I guess I was just taken aback a little bit by all the outdoor shots. There was some overdubbing because, you know, that's loud and hard to record and everything. So I understand that. But it was weird. It was like I was watching two things. Every time Skipper and Gilligan were up to something, I was like, oh yeah, this is like stereotypic, straight up grade A Gilligan's Island. And then stuff would happen with this high school teacher, and I'm like, who? I don't even know who this is. Like, this guy is not.
He doesn't have the confidence of the professor.
Yeah, yeah.
The professor that we know, of course, played by Russell Johnson, is very confident and definitive. And the professor, as played by John Gabriel, is a little more affable.
Yeah, and a little more like, his shirt's always buttoned way down, and you know, he's got his big hairy chest hanging out all the time, and he's going for kind of beef hunk beach guy, 60s guy a little bit.
Yeah.
Whereas the professor
was high school teacher.
Yeah. And you know, the professor later would always be, you know, he's always got the khakis and the button down shirt and the long sleeves and the, you know, he never really let his hair down. So that was a different kind of change, but just this pulling away from the stereotypes. Because in a lot of ways, all of the characters on this show were always stereotypes. And in fact, in some ways, the Skipper and Gilligan became brand new kinds of stereotypes for bumbling, kind of cartoonish live action characters. But they're the most original thing in the pilot. Everybody else feels like they're painted with just this broad stroke of like, get it, she's blonde and dumb. Get it, she's kind of cute, but she's dumb. Like that stuff was just so...
I get it, they're rich, but they're dumb.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Gilligan? He's goofy and dumb.
Right. It's very on the, Skipper, on the nose.
Maybe slightly less dumb. I don't know.
I mean, the whole crew is pretty dumb, to be honest. But yeah. But I do like, as the show would go on, that they settled on more iconic characters. Well, maybe it's just because it was on so long and they were there so much that they became iconic. But like I say,
I think that's part of it. Yeah.
I'll take Marianne over Bunny any day. Any day.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
not even.
You know, no disrespect to the lady who played Bunny, but she wasn't given the right part.
No, no.
And to not have to think that we could have not had Dawn Wells as Marianne Summers.
Right.
That's just crazy.
Here's the other crazy thing. Everyone always thinks of the music that.
That's classic, right?
Yeah. No, like that kids, must have never kids, changed. That must have been there from day one.
80 years, not 80, 60 years. Not quite 60. At least 50 years later, know this song, right?
Oh, yeah. No, everybody knew it. Even if you've never seen it, I feel like you knew it. But guess what? It's totally different in the pilot. I'm going to play just a taste of it because we can do that here on the show. Here you go. Listen to this.
In tropical sea is a tropic port. Vacation fun is the favorite sport. This is the place where the tourists flock, renting the boats at the busy dock.
And then it kind of goes on. You heard the little part there, two secretaries, and they start
introducing
everybody.
Yeah, it's a long intro. I can't imagine that even if this had ended up being the first episode, that they would have kept that song an entire
yeah
every time, because it's a long description of everyone boarding the boat.
Yeah, the show already weirdly gets away with giving you the origin story every week. But
it's so short. It's right. Like an edited version where they're like, oh yeah, that took too long in the pilot. Let's tighten that up. Mm-hmm. And we'll just introduce everybody like it's the credits. And that kind of works.
Yeah. What's great is they still do the end, the rest in a different way, but it's still that part of the song is still part of this weird intro.
And Calypso was hot in the 60s. Mm-hmm. So I get where they might've wanted to do a Calypso, but the rest of the music in the pilot is the not the beginning and end, but all the incidental music that happens during the tale is the same. It's the music that you associate with Gilligan, you know, wandering around the island, the music that brings you in from commercial and sends you back out. All of that's the same. Mm-hmm. And yet the theme that we came to know later feels like it fits with that music better than these Calypso versions at the front and back.
Oh, absolutely. And they almost, the stuff they ended up sticking with, both the original, well, I say original, but both the post-pilot version that said the movie star and the rest, and just throwing the professor and Marianne under the bus. And then later they added them back in, said the professor and Marianne, and they added them. Either one of those.
You know what the story is on that?
No, I would love to know, actually, because I don't know. What? Why? What was that whole thing about?
Bob Denver, who played Gilligan, did not like that the professor and Marianne, you know, Don Wells and Russell Johnson, were not credited. They said it was too expensive to go back and change it. And he said, well, then take me out.
Oh, wow.
If they're not going to be in, I don't want to be in either.
Wow.
And, I mean, that's just silly. They wouldn't have had to listen to him. He couldn't have forced them, but it apparently, you know, persuaded them to be fine. We'll redo it. Mm-hmm. And they changed the song. Now, originally, the Ballad of Gilligan's Isle was written by show creator Sherwood Schwartz and George Weil, and was recorded by a folk group called the Wellingtons. Second season version was a little more sea shanty-y, and was performed by a group called the Eligibles, according to Russell Johnson, the professor who wrote a book here on Gilligan's Isle. Mm-hmm. But they were never credited. The Eligibles were never credited. So the Wellingtons got credited for the first season version, but the second season version did not get a credit. However, that original pilot episode version, Calypso themed, you know who wrote that?
Let me take a guess. Harry Belafonte.
No, Belafonte, of course, you know, the premier U.S. known purveyor of Calypso music.
Yeah.
Written by John Williams.
Oh, what? Are you kidding me? Wow.
He wrote a lot. In fact, that music that plays in the middle, he wrote all that.
That's crazy to me. John Williams, creator of some of the greatest film scores of all time. That John Williams.
Yeah, he started out as the composer of the incidental music, worked on Gilligan's Island for 1964 and 1965, and was replaced for its last 2 years of shooting by Gerald Fried.
Wow.
But yeah, that John Williams.
That's
the same one who did Star Wars, also did the ins and out commercial entries and weird Calypso Gilligan's Island.
That's amazing. Okay, so the stuff that's like the intros and outros, the kind of bumper stuff, those are great, and they kind of have a cantina vibe to them, right? They've always sounded a little bit like, so now I can kind of see that this would be the guy. But the Calypso thing, I'd never guess that.
Oh, I know, right?
Yeah, that's just not.
It doesn't sound right. It's just silly.
Yeah.
Also, apparently not what they wanted, because they didn't end up using it.
No.
And then they didn't go back to him to say, make a new one. They went to somebody else. They went to the Wellingtons.
Yeah. And that music, and he would riff on it, you know, with like stuff later in the seasons and stuff. But that music became so iconic. So. And I forgot to mention what I was going to say before. The music as they stuck with used to freak me out as a kid. So you and I are too young for this to be aired live. We saw this in reruns and stuff on Saturdays and after school or whatever. And when I would hear this song, or when I even hear it now, I get this feeling of foreboding. This feeling of like, how bad would this suck to get stuck out in a 3-hour tour?
Well, because it's really a horror
Kind of is. Yes. It
right?
kind of is.
The way this story should end is everybody eats each other or kills each other. It's like Lord of the Flies. Right, but instead, it's just a happy-go-lucky crew of castaways.
Right. And they're all just laughing and having fun and making record players out of bamboo and whatever. And that's great. But as a kid, it really did weird me out. The intro in particular, there's something about the music, the cadence of it, the whole, you know, it's just kind of a, I don't know, has a dark tinge.
Well, that's the main
it.
Theme. That's different than the incidental stuff.
Oh, too. Yeah, for sure. But that would weird me out. And then when the weather started getting rough, the tiny ship was tossed and they would show the clouds and the lightning and the skippers all getting wet and trying to turn that stuff. It is scary. It freaked me out when I was younger. And I remember thinking, how can these people be so chill in this island situation? And it wasn't until Lost in 2004 that I was like, oh, yeah, okay, this is what it's like. This is what we're supposed to be feeling, not this other weird, discordant comedy meshed into this horror premise. But, yeah, it was fun to revisit that for me because I didn't finish it, but I started the second episode. And I think I may just watch these because they're short and dumb, and I can have them in
short.
The background. And
they don't require a whole lot of attention.
No.
In fact, do you know who the minnow was named after?
Okay, let me think of this. Minnie Pearl. No?
The minnow was named in reference to Newton Minow, the chairman of the United States Federal Communications Commission, in response to his landmark 1961 speech, Television and the Public Interest.
Oh, wow.
In that speech, Newton Minow lambasted TV producers for producing, quote, formula comedies about totally unbelievable characters. And, of course, he coined the term, which I bet a lot of people in the audience have heard but didn't know who said it, that television was, quote, a vast wasteland.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that was him either. That's a very
Newton
cool
Minow.
Connection.
So when Gilligan's Island was like, well, we're definitely making a show that's a formula comedy about unbelievable characters. Let's name the boat after Newton Minow.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's like us naming it, I don't know. Who's a controversial dude today?
Current FCC chairman is Ajit Pai. Let's just go with that. It would be like naming your internet show The Pie Hole, P-A-I.
Yeah, see? We got there. By the way, small thing about Minow, this is also his voice. This is him singing this whole time. Wouldn't that be great, though? Be amazing.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Here's a sad note. The final day of filming of the pilot, you may have noticed I mentioned earlier it was November 1963. The final day of filming was Friday, November 22nd, 1963.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
that name ring a bell?
Yeah, that's
that date. I mean,
both a notorious date in American history, but also the title of a Stephen King book about the self-same.
That's right. And the reason it's the title is because the day the day that President John F. Kennedy was assassinated. And in the open that they continued to use on Gilligan's Island throughout its run, you see a half-mast U.S. flag. If you look close.
Oh, so they were observing that day.
Because they filmed on November 22nd after the news was out, and one of those shots made it into the open, and that shot in the open and the pilot stayed in the open's almost entirely the same. They don't have the coffee in the pilot. Gilligan tries to serve the skipper a cup of coffee during the storm.
Yep.
They pull that out. Of course, the people boarding the boat goes much faster because they're not explaining everything about their lives the whole time.
I kind of like that though. I wasn't expecting it, but it was fun to have them. The singer say, "This guy's a high school teacher. Now he's gonna take it." It's like, oh my gosh.
He had an extra load last year, so they gave him some more time off, and now he cashed in his vacation days.
Exactly. His TAs will grade all the papers for him while he's out. Like they really,
the
really went.
The GPA of his students is an average. Scenes from this pilot episode were used in the season one Christmas episode, Birds Gotta Fly, Fish Gotta Talk, relating the landing of the minnow in flashbacks.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Even though Two on a Raft shows them already on the island,
because
it starts with the boat already crashed, it goes in a different direction. Because Two on a Raft ends up with them trying to get Gilligan to make a raft.
Mm.
that they can, that the, he and the skipper can then go and rescue everyone with. And then, you know, the upshot there is that Skipper and Gilligan get blown off course and land on an island of their own. Turns out it's actually the same island. They don't know that and mistake the other castaways for hostile natives of the island, and hilarity ensues, right?
Yeah.
Possibly offensive hilarity ensues, which is a running theme on Gilligan's Island throughout its run.
Sure.
But in the pilot, they're just trying to find the radio because Gilligan accidentally tosses the radio into the ocean. And so they're going through a bunch of fish.
Yeah, with the biggest fish hook I've ever seen, grabbing that radio in the first place.
Yeah.
Throws it out there, and then they got a pile of fish, and everyone's taking turns yelling into the fish's mouths, trying to communicate with the radio.
Because they find the radio in the fish, but they haven't found the transmitter.
Yeah.
So they have to yell into the fish, hoping that the transmitter, of course, will be on inside the fish.
That is the most Gilligan's Island ass thing I've ever seen them do.
And that's the pilot. That's not never made, even made it into the regular show. But I guess parts of that were birds got to fly, fish got to talk. So you can find the pilot on Daily Motion if you look around. It's legitimately on Prime Video, but you have to know to look for it because it's packaged with another pilot.
Right, some kind of series of lost pilots or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of cool, though, that even exists there. That's rad.
Yeah, I just kind of stumbled across that. Yeah. It was under the Forgotten TV Pilots name, which looks like a straight-to-DVD thing that somebody then uploaded to Prime Video and Prime Video got the rights to. So you can find it there as well. Mm. But if you're like, oh, I don't want to do that. I have the Gilligan's Island DVD sets, probably a special feature. And, of course, scenes from it in Birds Gotta Fly, Fish Gotta Talk.
Yeah.
As well, if you just want to see parts of it.
It's also worth mentioning at this point that I've always wondered why Gilligan's Island didn't end up on Hulu or Netflix or somewhere with a classic collection of genre stuff like that. You see all sorts of stuff from the 60s, 50s, you know, Lucille Ball's on Hulu, and you know, you can I'm sure I don't know who owns the rights or whatever at this point, but I always thought when streaming hit and I'd start to see these old shows crop up, I'm like, oh, Gilligan's Island will be here eventually. Like, when's that going to happen?
You know why? Because they make a lot of money selling it into syndication even now.
They must. Yeah.
Syndication is handled by Warner Brothers Television because Turner acquired the United Artists share of the series after 1986. Mm-hmm. That's why the pilot finally aired on TBS on October 16th, 1992, because Turner found the original negative in the archives of MGM UA that Ted Turner purchased.
That's crazy.
And they're like, hey, we've got the pilot. We should put it out there.
Yeah.
It has been syndicated most recently on the TV Land and MeTV channels.
Oh, okay. I could see it over there. Sure. Hey, you guys. Time to talk about our good buddies at Netgear. We love Netgear. Yes, Netgear. Hey, how old is your Wi-Fi feeling these days? Does it buffer all the time when you're trying to stream stuff? Does connecting new devices to it slow it down? Can it handle all the gaming video calls and large files you're throwing at it? And what happens when you try to do all that stuff at once? Oh, man! No good comes from that. It doesn't matter how fast your internet connection is. If your Wi-Fi router is old and outdated, with Orbi Wi-Fi 6 from Netgear, your Wi-Fi will feel new again. Wi-Fi 6 is the latest tech that allows more devices to connect and stream simultaneously without impacting speed or reliability. The result delivers the fastest Wi-Fi for all your devices anywhere in your home. Stream in HD, 4K, or even 8K without buffering, eliminate lag while gaming, and connect more devices to your Wi-Fi than ever before. Orbi Wi-Fi 6 is like upgrading your Wi-Fi to first class, you know, like on a plane. It's very comfortable. Lay back, put your feet up. If you're ready for the best Wi-Fi ever, you can get it today from Netgear and never worry about Wi-Fi again. Check out Orbi Wi-Fi 6 at your local Best Buy or at netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. That's netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. And we thank them for supporting this show.
So my guess is that those deals are sweetened by the fact that they can say you can't even get the streaming MeTV, pay a little extra. But also because it's Warner, I wonder if it ends up being one of the things that shows up on HBO Max.
Oh, entirely possible. Sure. That could be interesting. I mean, it's not like I've been pining for it, you know, but there are.
No, but it was surprising that something like when you look at Dick Van Dyke, Family Ties, you know, all these big shows that are on CBS All Access, you think, oh, well, other shows that aren't from CBS, even though Gilligan's Island aired on CBS, it wasn't produced by CBS.
Right, right.
That you're like, oh, well, maybe those will end up on a streaming service somewhere. And I think it has to do that not all the streaming services have launched yet.
Yeah, that's a good point. I also I feel like there was a time when my kids were real little that I wanted to show them Gilligan's Island and really couldn't very well. Like
DVD or VHS.
Yeah,
they've actually been pretty good at releasing. This has not been one of those that they held back and didn't release. They've released multiple box sets of this.
Now, do you have a... I wrote this down to ask you this very question.
And you can buy it. You can buy it from
you can totally buy it, right? Yeah.
Amazon.
That's true. Stuff, yeah. You can get it all. All right. So here's the big question for you. Do you have a Gilligan's Island episode that jumps out at you as the most memorable thing they ever did? Because I do.
That's a great question. I don't think I do. The record player thing pops to mind, but I think that's because you just referred to it.
Yeah, it's entirely possible.
There's one where Gilligan does something wrong and it screws everything up and then they can't get off the island.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Oh, wait, that's all of them.
Yeah, that one. All right.
Yeah, and I watched a lot of these, like you say, after school. Mm-hmm. They would just, you know, be on in reruns.
My memory is really only of two. One much more secondarily, but the one I remember the second most is the one where a Japanese soldier is still on the island and has been there since World War II and doesn't know the war's over. And it's played very insensitively by a white man with squinty eyes. It's awful. But I remember that only because of what that was. But the one that's the most memorable for me is when
that's actually based on reality. There were Japanese soldiers in islands, I think mostly in the Philippines, who refused to surrender because they didn't believe that their country would have surrendered and kept fighting even after the war was over.
Thankfully, something like Gilligan's Island brought one of those stories to life. And
probably in the most sensitive way.
Clearly. But the other one for me, the big one that jumps out, is there was a crate of either seeds or vegetables. I don't remember if they were seeds and then they planted them and ate them or if they showed up as vegetables. But one way or the other, the cast ended up eating these big, ridiculous seeds. And it turns out they were irradiated from nuke tests. And so Gilligan ate carrots, and it made it so he could see all the way back to the mainland.
Carrots are good for your eyes.
Exactly. So he could see all the way back to the mainland, which turns out to be a total bullcrap anyway, that it even does what people think it is. But anyway, he can see all the way there. Or maybe he was the strong one and Skipper could see. But anyway, the way they had it worked out is everybody ate their own thing that was like their favorite veggie, and it gave them super whatever it was. Super strength, super vision, super hearing. There's all these stereotypes about foods and what they do for you. And that thing just stuck with me. Just this idea of a giant carrot and him gnawing on it just is burned into my brain. That and then later stuff with like the Globetrotters where they'd show up. Do you remember that? That was always happening.
Oh, yeah. So there were three film sequels. Three.
Yeah.
I mean, this show only ran for three seasons.
Mm-hmm.
It was canceled without telling the production crew that it was going to be canceled. So there's no final episode.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, a lot of the cast had bought houses near where it was filming, not realizing that that was dumb because they weren't going to have, they all thought they were going to get a fourth season.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a last minute decision by CBS to move Gunsmoke into its slot and get rid of it. So it was beloved and kind of had that gone before its time air about it for the audience. So in 1978, Rescue from Gilligan's Island had them finally spotted because there was a flood. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There was a flood and the professor found this item that somehow let him get more accurate barometric readings. And it was just in time because there was a tsunami coming. So they lashed all the cabins together, survived the tsunami, floated out to sea, Gilligan was going to cook them some fish and accidentally lit a fire and almost burned down the whole thing. But that alerted the Coast Guard. They rescued him. And the thing that the professor had found was a spy thing from the Soviets. And so that was the rest of the movie, was the Soviets trying to trick Gilligan into giving that thing back to them because the professor had let him keep it as a good luck charm. And in the end, totally unrelated to that Soviet plot, they go off on a Christmas reunion tour because, hey, if a boat ride went bad and you ended up spending years stranded on an island together, obviously you're all going to get back on a boat again from that same captain.
Yeah.
And that's what they did. Oh, and guess what? They got blown off course and ended up on the same island.
Yep. And even in this pilot, they play with that joke a little when they go around the backside and they think they've found another boat and it's their own boat. It's like a running gag on this show.
Now, in 1979, just a year later, they did another movie called The Castaways on Gilligan's Island, where they're rescued once again. But this time, the Howells buy the island and turn it into a resort.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
That way, if they land on it by accident again, it's fine.
That's so dumb.
And then the one you're mentioning, the Harlem Globetrotters on Gilligan's Island, 1981. Martin Landau plays a villain that tries to take over the island from the Howells, and they're thwarted by the intervention of the Harlem Globetrotters.
It's so dumb. The fact that they were like, they played a basketball game in the sand on the island. I remember all this like it was yesterday. It's real bad. Very bad. Jumping the shark moments for those guys toward the end.
Yeah, the Harlem Globetrotters one. I think they thought at that point, well, wait, those first two reunion movies were so successful. Maybe we could just keep making these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the answer was no.
Well, here, okay,
but
so
the
another,
thing about those reunions is you get a third and fourth Ginger.
Yeah.
Because we had a different Ginger in the pilot.
Yep.
And then, of course, we had the Ginger that we all came to know and love, Tina Louise. Mm-hmm. But she always had fights with the producers over what her character should be. And because of those disputes, she didn't end up doing the reunion movies. So Judith Baldwin played Ginger for Rescue from Gilligan's Island and The Castaways on Gilligan's Island. And then they got a fourth one, Constance Forsland, to play Ginger in The Harlem Globetrotters on Gilligan's Island.
Yeah, that's awesome. Makes me want to see all these again just to kind of have a better perspective on it.
I watched a little of Rescue from Gilligan's Island just to see the rescue and just to see when they got lost again.
Yeah. How dumb was it on a scale from
I fast forwarded through large parts. It's so slow.
Yeah.
I mean, 78, you definitely made for TV movies, which is what these were. Mm-hmm. You probably didn't want the action to move too fast because you knew people were getting up to go to the bathroom, get stuff out of the fridge, not paying close attention. But man, does it move. Like the parade when they get back to LA in their honor feels like it's in real time. I'm like, wow, this is taking forever. They're milking this.
Yeah. I just was looking at, looking up some of the cast, those who are still with us. Tina Louise, who was born Tina Blacker, still with us. She's 85.
Yeah. That's another thing is Jim Backus was in poor health for the Harlem Globetrotters. So most of the movie, you see Thurston Howell IV, his supposed son, played by David Ruprecht. But Backus actually insisted on making a cameo despite his ill health. So he's in that. So he was in all of them. And yet, the woman who thought she was too old for close-ups, Natalie Schaefer, yeah, she's fine. She's in all of them.
Yeah, she's still there. I don't know. I have a weird thing with this thing. I also had a coming of age moment with this thing once when I was probably 18. Somebody had shown me a picture or some video of Bob Denver talking in an interview or something. I can't remember exactly what the context was, but I remember thinking, oh my gosh, that person you're showing me can't possibly be Gilligan. That person you're showing me is 1,000 years old. And he's gray and he's hunched over and he's, you know, normal human being. But in my mind, it was like, what? Gilligan doesn't get old. Like, what is that about? And the truth is, if I went back and looked at like the specials and the movies and stuff, he was old then. But
like he wasn't looking like the youngster that he was in the 60s.
Yeah,
certainly.
Yeah. And so I remember it was this moment of awakening. It was like, oh yeah, we age and die.
Like, that was when you learned mortality from Bob Denver.
Yeah, and you'd think by 17 or 18, I'd have that worked out. But nope, it seemed like it was a poignant moment of, if Bob Denver can get this old.
So wait a minute.
We're all going to get this old.
Natalie Schaefer, Jim Backus, Alan Hale Jr., Bob Denver, they've all passed away.
Yeah.
Don Wells, she's still with us?
Yes. Hold on. I can tell you right now.
I want to say Russell Johnson. I want to say he's with us.
Russell Johnson died in 2014, just not very long ago. He was 90 or something. Yes, Don Wells, 81, still with us. She's my mother's age.
So Tina Louise and Don Wells
should
get together and do a show called Ginger Wins.
That's a great idea. Sign me
and
up.
Tina
for
Louise
this.
Could just rub it in those producers' faces. The producers are also dead.
Yeah.
And just, I outlived you all, except for Marianne, but she's cool.
If Jane Fonda and what's her name can do this Netflix show, I don't see any reason why these two can't get something going.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That'd be great. I would watch it. I don't know if they care, and they probably don't, but
they can get away, but she'd call it Ginger Wins, and it's just about an aging movie star reflecting on her life.
She's in Don Wells was most recently in 2019's The Epic Tales of Captain Underpants. She played a voice.
She did VO. Yeah, all right.
She did some, in 2016, she was in The Bold and the Beautiful, one episode, kind of went in there and did that. Bunch of other stuff. Some of it, in 2000, she was in The Man Show. Like, she's gotten around. She did Baywatch in 92. She's having fun with her world, I think.
I always liked Marianne.
Yeah, she's the best. She was my favorite by far.
Well, and that was always a thing is, you know, for people who were interested in women, do you prefer Ginger or Marianne?
I'm a total Marianne person.
Me too.
100%.
I've learned to appreciate Ginger more, but I actually didn't like her.
Oh, I didn't either. It was not my style at all.
I thought she was too snooty.
Yeah. I probably appreciate it more now because I know I'm more in tune with the idea that this was a character and it was never a real person. So I have respect for the people who can do the character.
And then I assume if you're interested in men, it was always Skipper or never mind.
Yeah. The professor.
It's the professor. Was, yeah. Come on. Yeah. There's no choice.
Yeah. There. If you're into idiots, then the other two are your picks. But yeah, like there was always that thing. Are you a Marianne or are you a Ginger person I was growing up? And I just was always, and I've got a friend who is full Ginger, all the way Ginger.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Oh. And, you know, it's one of these defining differences.
I have a friend. She was into Ginger as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
this is the same friend of mine who had never seen Star Wars. And I was like, man, but you're my friend anyway.
Okay. Yeah. Somehow that worked out. How did that work out? Yeah. You guys are still together. All right. Check this out. There's just a couple little files I captured. One is Gilligan pretending like he's super stoked about seeing the boat that is actually theirs. So I'll just play that for you.
Yippee! Yahoo! Hooray! Yippee! Yahoo!
Yeah, I just sort of...
You know, when you play it out of context and you don't see the expressions,
It
doesn't sound that convincing. But also, he's starting to realize that there's something wrong, right?
Right.
As he's saying yippee yahoo, he's looking at the others who are noticing that that's the minnow.
Right. And there's definitely some nods to things that would come in the future, like him trying to save the day, but just landing flat on his face because he jumped the wrong place. Or the coconut fell and he didn't say look out until it hit the skipper already. And then he said, look out below. But the skipper had already been hit in the head. Like, thanks for the warning sort of thing. These were all like early planted, you know, seeds being planted for the kind of
thing slapstick. Yeah. It's Three Stooges stuff, you know. There's more going on here than just the Three Stooges slapstick, you know, but it's definitely got that element.
And it's fun. I would actually seek this out if you have any interest in sort of history, television history, and you like to see the differences between pilots and true first episodes when things go to air.
That
this is just like a gift in that regard. It's fun to see those differences.
And we touched on it, but the first season is black and white. They didn't switch to shooting in color until seasons 2 and 3.
Yeah, so you'll get that, and plus you get the, the movie star and the rest. You get that for at least the first, maybe second season.
I think that's the first season.
Is that just first? I meant to check.
That one I am unsure of.
Yeah, so that's a weird transition, And then you just get to watch these people do dumb stuff for a real long time. And I think I'm in the mood for it. I think I could use a little dumb in my life. So nothing wrong with Gilligan's Island. It's a fine pick for Autopilot. Let us know what you think at currentgeek@gmail.com because we'd love to know.
Their names were inserted into the lyrics in the second season.
Oh, there you go. All right, then. I mean, we get feedback about this stuff all the time. For example, someone emailed us, Kelly, in fact, today and said, "Hey, guys, I heard your Apocalypse Now podcast." That's when we did our film review of Apocalypse Now. "And was wondering if either of you have watched Ken Burns' The Vietnam War, a definite must-watch, regards, Kelly." Absolutely, I have. It's fantastic, like all Ken Burns documentaries. Tom, have you seen it?
"I write to you from the shores of Vietnam." Oh, wait. No, that's the Civil War. Sorry.
I mean, you're not wrong. They still do some of that. Like, there's the Ken Burns thing is there for sure.
"Dearest Amelia, the baseball games we're playing here from the New York Knickerbockers."
I love that stuff. But anyway.
No. It's great stuff.
He's an American treasure. He's a universal treasure. And I hope that guy just makes these things forever. But yes, it's very good. But my point in pointing this out is to say, look at the kind of, you know, stuff you guys can follow up with. Come to us with an email like, "Hey, did you know Bob Denver was the most frequent guest on The Gong Show," which I think is possibly right. True.
"Played a beatnik in the many lives of Dobie Gillis."
Yeah. Like there's some fun side stuff that we're probably not going to mention here. And we'd love to get your feedback and some of your thoughts on this stuff, too. We know you guys are historians of this kind of weird nerdity. So check it out. That's currentgeek@gmail.com. Next month, we will be doing another pilot, and this time it will be a drama called Wise Guy. Not Guys.
Wise Guy, huh?
Yeah. I don't want anyone to think it's that Wise Guys movie with...
Not that.
I can't even remember who's in that.
This is a TV show.
TV show called Wise Guy. It has Jonathan Banks in it, which is a supporting role for him, but I guess technically he was a supporting role in Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul.
Trout, Breaking Bad.
Yeah, but he's great in this. It was the first time I'd ever seen him. In fact, it wasn't until Breaking Bad that I was reminded of him. I saw him in Breaking Bad and went, "Oh my gosh, that's that guy from Wise Guy." Like, that's a weird connection I have to this show. I remember it being a very good drama. We'll see if it was. Certainly the pilot may or may not be the best indicator of that, but that's next month on our Autopilot edition of Current Geek.
Yeah, you can get that free almost anywhere. It's on Pluto TV, Vudu's free tier, Roku's free tier, Tubi, IMDb TV, all over the place.
I like that IMDb TV, by the way. It's fun.
Oh, yeah. I use Tubi a lot myself.
Yeah, and
Pluto. In fact, that's where I found The Rescue from Gilligan's Island. It was on Tubi.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, and Pluto's good, too. I like all that stuff. I like those free services. They're good. I mean, the commercials aren't bad. They're not so bad. It's still better than regular TV frequency and stuff, so... worth checking those out. But anyway, that's Wise Guy next month right here. It'll be the month of March right here on Current Geek. Next week, what are we doing? Oh, it's a news episode next week.
Yeah.
So we'll be doing that. And then we got a little surprise coming up. We're not going to tell you too much about it, but a little something we're working on. Workshopping, you know, bouncing
we
around.
We could do the surprise next week, actually.
Yeah.
If we wanted.
Well, we could. Actually, we could do
we
that.
We hadn't talked about when.
All right, next week may or may not be our surprise. That's all we'll say.
We'll let you know.
Yeah, we'll let you know. It could be cool.
Tune in.
Yep.
Find out.
And if you've got your own pilots that you think we should be covering and we haven't done yet, let us know via that email address once again, currentgeek@gmail.com. Tom, what's going on with you? I know your book's hitting. It's happening. What's happening?
Yes. March 24th is the official release date of Trigger, the sequel to Pilot X. It's actually pronounced Trigger, but because you can't hear me spell it, when I say it, I say Trigger. In fact, Pilot X gets corrected in the book for his pronunciation of Trigger, T-R-I-G-O-R. And it is a time travel book, much like Pilot X. It tells the story of what happens after Pilot X finishes his job in the first book in the series. So, once again, coming out March 24th. If you want to be first to get it, or be able to order it before other people, you can go to inkshares.com, search Trigger, T-R-I-G-O-R, and pre-order it right now. It's the best way to get it.
Awesome. Does the ship find itself ashore on an uncharted desert planet?
No.
Oh, okay.
Verity, the time ship, is increasingly developing her personality. They do find themselves cast away.
Oh,
a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. A nice connection to the show today.
From a certain point of view.
I see. All right. Well, do check that out. Also, I launched a new comic this week. It's called Fred and Can. And
if you
think,
love it.
If you think that sounds weird, it is. It's about a guy. His name is Fred, and he literally communicates with a can of expired cream corn. You want to know more about that? Does that sound interesting to you? Does it sound like unlike anything you've heard of before in comics? Well, it may be. I don't know. That's kind of what I'm aiming for. So go read it.
It's got the tone of all the comics I loved reading in the newspaper.
Oh, good.
I got to tell you that.
That is kind of the, it is the amalgam in my mind of a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
And I actually had the idea like as far back as 06, but I never pulled the trigger or the trigger. But I'm pulling the trigger now. And anyway, there's a new one coming out every Monday. This next Monday we'll have one. There's two up there already. Go to fredcancomic.com or you can find it at frogpants.com. It's going to do it for us. Don't forget, you can support this show at patreon.com/currentgeek. I just finished this month's art. It'll come right to you at your doorstep if you sign up at currentgeek.com or patreon.com/currentgeek. And that's going to do it for me, for Tom, for the rest of you. We'll see you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.